Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, did you listen to the Patreon episode last night?
Yeah, so I think we were supposed to do a start our 90s music countdown. It was supposed to be me, you, and Dr. Jennifer. And I was asleep. I told you at midnight I wasn't going to be able to stay up till 4 a.m. to do it, which is reasonable. And your wife decided that she'd rather, instead of spending time with you, she would rather watch, like, 120 Day Fiancé.
Now, to be fair, she's going to be working each of the next two nights, so we won't see each other again until like Thursday.
So you mean even then, she would not. She's not willing to spend any time with.
Yeah, exactly. So I came home. I thought, all right, we're going to spend the evening together for the only time this week. No.
Anyway, so you did the podcast yourself. If people aren't interested, we'll talk about football in a couple minutes. But you played a bunch of songs, and you were picking the best, you know, Tupac song and the best Pearl Jam song, and you know, basically. Cutting down to 32 by picking the best song of bands or artists that might have two or three or four options. So it was really the first episode I've ever listened to of 32 Fans, just the whole episode.
So you're finally a listener.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it.
Are you like Adam Driver? You can't hear your own voice?
Yeah, I can't hear my own voice. I'm a lot like Adam Driver. I'll give you a couple quick hits. Blink 182, Damn It When We Were Kids was a bigger song than Adam's song or anything else. So Damn It should have at least been in the top three. For whatever reason, it's not held up well. Maybe.
Well, All the Small Things and What's My Age Again were the top two that I think you had proposed. And I threw in Adam song because I liked it. And I ended up advancing it. So spoiler alert.
You were unaware that the Gallagher brothers are basically like Iran in the United States. They can't be in the same room. Like,
no, I was aware. That's why I said I don't think they'll ever have a concert again.
You said you're not an Oasis fan, but you would pay $120 to go to an Oasis concert. I thought that was weird.
No, because I said they're great, and I said them not getting along would be entertaining actually if they fought on stage.
The P. Diddy Godzilla song cannot be in the top 1,000 songs of the decade, let alone the top 32. I don't think it made it, but
I don't know. A couple of the listeners said they liked it actually more than Cashmere, the song that it samples.
Yeah.
It's not a sample because Jimmy Page is actually performing.
Right. Jimmy Page is on it, but still, that song stinks.
Yeah.
So those are my music takes. Subscribe to the Patreon if you want to hear. We've got several more weeks of. Music stuff, but we also did a live reaction show. You did like 15 minutes right after the Vikings game with me, where you were very drunk and you just went insane for like 15 minutes and then did not remember it later that night. I wanted to talk about, before we make picks and do everything else, I think you've got a fancy chart for us today. Also, I wanted to go, there's five teams with coaching vacancies. Four of them have been filled. Let's rate the coaching vacancies. And you know how they've been filled. And I think the Browns are probably going to hire Josh McDaniels. That's my guess. They still have a bunch of interviews. They're interviewing Jim Schwartz. I'd be surprised if he gets it. Eric Bieniemy already interviewed. I don't know. They have six total. I think three done, three to go. You'd have to assume Josh McDaniels is the favorite there. He's out of the playoffs for the first time in a long time, so he's not at a disadvantage in terms of interviewing.
Can I go on a rant about that for a second?
Sure.
The Vikings just finished a game Sunday night, big playoff win. They got to travel to the West Coast. They got to play the best team in the NFC on Saturday in the early game. They have a short week. And their offensive coordinator on Thursday will be interviewing with two different teams for their head coaching positions. Mm-hmm. That's just bonkers to me.
Yeah, you should not.
How is he supposed to do
that? It doesn't
make
any sense.
When I go on interviews, I spend like several hours doing research ahead of time. All the more so, Kalva Homer, as our people say, like Stepanski must be spending like, I just don't understand how it's possible for him to spend the time to be preparing. And by the way, I'm not saying that he shouldn't have an opportunity to get a head coaching job. I'm saying that the NFL should put a moratorium on hiring until the end of the playoffs. It's to everyone's advantage. The NFL can push this narrative, these conversations and this talk, this sports talk, into February, which means another month they can dominate. I just don't understand.
Yeah, I would say, like, if you're an offensive coordinator in a playoff, with a playoff matchup this week, you're like one of the 20 busiest people in the whole country. And then like
it should be.
Yeah, and then to like have a job interview, like your dream job on top of that, doesn't make any sense.
It's insane.
Yeah. So but listen, this is well trodden territory. Everyone agrees.
Yeah, well, apparently not though, because that's not how they're doing it. So
all right, so let's start the new news. The Giants hired Joe Judge, who everyone's going to pretend to have heard of, but nobody had heard of until today. He was the special teams coach for four seasons.
No, I've heard of him. He has a daytime courtroom TV show in New York City.
So he is 5 years of special teams coach as a special teams coach for the Patriots, and he also added on wide receiver, which is a very strange combination, wide receiver / special teams coach.
Does he get to bring Matthew Slater with him?
Yeah, I could see his Slater being his coach. I mean, listen, Slater at a certain point has to retire. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to know anything about Judge, but just in terms of experience, we discussed at length last offseason how the track record for coaches that have 1 year of coordinator experience is pretty bad. Now, special teams is a coordinator. Obviously, it's
technically,
you know, it's below the level, I'd say, pay scale and import of at least quarterback's coach, if not maybe all, you know.
Now, who's Harbaugh was
special teams coach.
John Harbaugh was a special teams coach. Jim Fossil, or not Jim Fossil, his
John
son.
John Fossil.
John Fossil was a special teams coach. I'm trying to think of who else has been a special teams coach that became a head coach.
Well, John Fossil became a head coach?
He was an interim coach for the Rams when they fired Fisher. Right. Yeah. I don't know if that really counts. But.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm not going to pretend, and like clearly they say Belichick, you know, was impressed with this guy right away. So maybe it'll work. He was going to get the Mississippi State job, which is a serious SEC job. And this is his alma mater, or at least where he was beforehand. So, like, he was definitely in demand. So, fine. I'd say jury's out on that one.
I mean, Mississippi State is fine, but it's like a bottom tier SEC job compared to.
Yes, but they can't. But that's still like that's still one of the 25 biggest jobs in college football, based on pay scale and stuff.
Okay, but it's nowhere close to being an NFL coach.
It's not. It's not close to being an NFL coach.
Maybe for like the Jaguars.
It's not close. The pay
which is unfair.
More.
The Jaguars are better than the Giants. So
yeah. And the Panthers just signed Matt Rhule. The story there is not that they signed him, but that they gave him an enormous contract. To me, that makes a lot of sense.
6 years, $60 million.
To me, that makes a lot of sense.
It's a big
because
investment.
It's an easy way to circumvent the salary cap. First of all, you know, it's a good way for rich teams or teams.
Well, assuming that he's really good. Yeah, obviously they're rich.
But there's if you fire Rhule after 2 years because he goes 3-13 2 years in a row, it doesn't affect the on the field quality of your football team the same way. Paying Trumaine Johnson,
and it doesn't affect David Tepper's
and it doesn't affect David Tepper's pocket, so it's absurd.
Yeah, yeah, and apparently he called the Giants and he said, "Will you match that deal?" And I'll get on the plane, and the Giants said no. So
well, he clearly used the Panthers as leverage. Like he got that contract. Listen, to give a major college coach, you have to pay the per year the NFL coaches.
But this is the second biggest contract.
Yeah,
in history,
100% now. But the college coaches' contracts now are so long. At a decent length, that even though most of them are not making what an NFL coach makes, the total value of their contract, and you could
they have some security.
And if you're bad in college, I mean, the Mississippi State coaches and the Mississippi coaches usually get 3 or 4 years, but if you do an okay job, you can easily squeeze out 6 years. An NFL coach, to get to six years, you need to be making a Super Bowl almost.
You got
to
be in a Super Bowl.
Or, you know, consistent playoff wins.
Yeah.
So, you know, listen, David Tepper's the richest owner in the NFL, I believe, so.
Yep.
Giving Matt Rhule that sort of money is a no downside, and it's a high upside coach. The other coaches that were hired were both retreads, right? Ron Rivera gets hired to coach, coach Washington, and Mike McCarthy gets hired to coach the Cowboys. So,
where does Jason Garrett land?
I think he's going to be the Giants OC, I think, is what people are saying.
There was talk of the Giants hiring
him. Well, Judge has never been an offensive or defensive coordinator anywhere, which means he's going to, by the way, he's like pursuing a doctorate. He's clearly a smart guy. He's going to need a veteran offensive coordinator and defense. So Garrett there is not a bad idea.
Why not bring Wade Phillips?
I would bring Wade Phillips. I think you need a veteran DC or somebody like that. There aren't a million guys around because it's hard to. You can hire any coordinator as your coach. It's hard to just steal somebody off someone's staff to get them as.
I don't understand why Phillips was let go by the Rams. Like, he wasn't their problem.
No, Phillips was not their problem. But sometimes you just want to, you know, maybe he was resistant to analytics or something, or he didn't get along personally with McVay, or
resistant to analytics, he'll do great for the Giants.
Yeah,
though.
Well, maybe McVay just feels that.
No, Gettleman's got four computers.
They got computers. He's got AOL.
Yeah.
It's possible that he felt like his best days are behind him. It's funny. McVay was like going to be the president of the United States last year. Now he's just another guy. Yeah.
Well, that's what I said. You can't anoint these jobs. We did it with Dan Quinn in Atlanta.
Yeah, I did it.
We can't anoint these young coaches as future Hall of Famers based on 1 or 2 years. I mean, Raheem Morris went 10-6 his first year in Tampa. Now that was a little bit different because it was sort of a little bit of a fluke, even the way they won those games. But you need to see a little bit of consistency year after year. And you know, I'm not saying Sean McVay is not a great coach.
Who wins more, Rivera in Washington or McCarthy in Dallas?
Well, so McCarthy you got to put a big asterisk, because what we saw in McCarthy the last few years in Green Bay was not impressive. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the people who were sort of at the forefront of criticizing Mike McCarthy in Green Bay, like the Warren Sharps of the world,
yeah,
have actually been defending this. They've been saying that McCarthy has changed. He's learned. He took that year off to sort of, you know, really sort of understand some more modern analytical approaches to offense. The problem is that you always hear this, right? Mm-hmm. Like when Tom Thibodeau came to the Timberwolves, they said that he spent his year off from the Bulls hanging out with Pop and with Steve Kerr, and he was going to come in and understand all these new things, and then he was the same old guy. So can you teach an old dog new tricks? I don't know. So if it's old McCarthy and old Rivera, I would certainly rather have Rivera than McCarthy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but also Rivera's been different guys, because Rivera started out as super conservative, and then he became Riverboat Ron, and then he slowly went back to being conservative again. So we have to see who these guys are. And sometimes when you have a fire under the guy's ass, he's a little bit different than when he gets a little bit too comfortable. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, McCarthy, listen, the truth is the Packers got better after McCarthy, but a bigger part of that reason is that they've been healthy and they hit, you know, the biggest home run in free agency with two dynamite pass rushers, far more than
It was a bit reversion to the mean, because they weren't a third. They were like an 11-5 team.
Yes, they were
year,
definitely
they were
not a 13.
About a 10-6 or 9-7 team last year, mm-hmm. who just had a little bit of bad luck.
Yeah.
So.
All right. We picked the lines on the Patreon podcast. What else?
Yeah, I think you killed me. I think you beat me like 3-0 because you had already seen.
Well, I saw the Vikings one. I didn't guess that one.
Yeah.
Before we guess, do you have a fancy chart for us today? Didn't you want to do the best football weekends of all time or something?
Oh yeah, I mean I have a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, I went through and did that. So listener Amir asked if this past weekend, and he asked I think in the middle of the Vikings game or something, or maybe at the end of the Vikings game, was the best wild card weekend ever. So I went back the last 30 years, and I looked, and there was a couple of – it's actually crazy. The only time in the last 30 years that we've had all four games come down, the final score be within a single score, was this year and in 1991. 1991, none of them were particularly good games, though. The Falcons beat the Saints 27-20, Oilers beat the Jets 17-10, Cowboys beat the Bears 17-13, and the Chiefs beat the Raiders 10-6 in a game with nothing but field goals after the second quarter, so that was pretty boring. None of those seemed like very exciting games. 2002 was a bonkers Sunday with the Steelers, Browns, and the 49ers, Giants back-to-back. You remember that, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but the Saturday games were bad, so I couldn't include that one. And so my top five
Wait,
all
the,
time.
Wait, you're talking about the 2002, that was the same day, right? Browns Steelers, which is the Browns.
Was
is
the
that the
Browns' game.
Last playoff game? Or did they? Yeah, it is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
9-7
Browns.
Because they didn't make the playoffs within the 10-6 Derek Anderson year.
The 10-6 year.
Yes,
exactly.
That was a great game. And the Trey Junkin game, right? The bad snap from the Giants when they were trying to beat
the
Niners.
49ers Giants.
I was in Israel.
Game, yeah, back to back.
But I did watch those games, yeah.
Oh, that was the. Did you watch the bet? Did I not know that?
I think we've discussed that a bunch of times, but you may not have remembered.
Oh, what a deeply religious man you are. I didn't realize that.
I was just too. I was too immature to start college, which is why I got married like 18 months later.
Yeah, exactly. You went basically from your post high school trip to your marriage.
I think that's what happened. That is what happened.
Yeah, it's like George Costanza went from pimples and braces to baldness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he had a very short window. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So my top five wildcard weekends of the last 30 years. Number five, 1993. By the way, a lot of Jets are going to appear in this little segment. So in 1993, the worst game was the Raiders blew out the Broncos to 42-24. As I said, none of these except for this year in 91 were all four games a good game. So blowout there. Number third best game was Giants beat the Vikings 17-10. The Vikings were leading in the second half, but they lost their quarterback and they lost their lead.
I was watching every playoff game at this point in 93, but I don't remember the Giants-Vikings game that well.
It was on Shabbat.
Okay, that makes sense.
Number two was the Packers-Lions game.
Yes.
The Lions score a go-ahead touchdown, and then Favre hit Sterling Sharp for a 40-yard mm-hmm. bomb to win 28-24. Yep. You remember that one? And then number one was the Chiefs beat the Steelers 27-24 in overtime. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that. But
so, okay, so that's 93. The top four are all more recent. So number four is in 2004. The fourth game, a blowout Colts destroy the Broncos 49-24, nothing to say. Number three, Vikings go into Lambeau, Randy Moss moons the crowd. Disgusting act. Number two, the Rams beat the Seahawks 27-20. Three fourth quarter lead changes, the final one with 2:11 remaining. Then the Seahawks take the ball, drive all the way down to the Rams 5, and the game ends on the 5-yard line. So very good game. But the number one game was the Chargers and the Jets tied 17-all at the end of regulation. Nate Kading misses a field goal. You want to tell
me? No,
what
well, that's
this
not.
Game?
It's no. The Jets are up 7, right?
Yeah. Then the Chargers tie it at the end of regulation.
No, the Jets are up 7, and they get and Eric Barton, the linebacker, hits Breeze, and they get a 15-yard penalty, and the Chargers score and tie the game. That's the key play of the game,
Then it goes to overtime.
Katie misses a field goal, and the Jets win. So that's my wife's birthday. It was our first birthday after we got married, and we had plans, and I had to postpone and then cancel them because the game went like 4 hours, 20 minutes. And it's the single maddest she's ever been at me. The last time she also wanted to hang out with me. Like, now she wouldn't care. She'd go out with her friends. Like, today, tomorrow's
her
birthday.
What else happened that weekend for you as a Jets-Mets fan?
What else happened that weekend?
Yeah, the Mets signed Carlos Beltran.
Okay, the Mets signed their now manager, Carlos Beltran. I think, and I guess this is the anniversary of that because my wife's birthday is tomorrow and she's like, hey, I'm hanging out with my friends, by the way. Is that okay? I was like, yeah. Is his name Chad? Okay, fine.
Yeah. Did you see that picture of the Chads in the patron group chat?
Who are the Chads?
There was a picture of like 7 guys at the Twins game, and they're good looking guys, I have to say. But I think one of my takeaways, by the way, from our live podcast is I said our listeners are surprisingly attractive.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, not all of them. Some of you are ugly. You know who you are. But all right. Number 3 is 2010. The fourth game, a snooze fest. Ravens beat the Chiefs 30-7. The number 3 game, three great games in 2010. The Packers beat the Eagles 21-16. But Michael Vick leads the Eagles into the red zone as the game ends. He throws a pick in the game ends, so the Packers hold on 21-16. Number 2, the Jets against the Colts. Tell us what happened that game.
Which year is this?
2010.
So 2010. This was a great game. The Jets, the Colts took the lead with the Jets. I think the Jets take the lead late. The Colts, Manning marches down, gives the Colts the lead. The Colts kick off. The Jets, Cromartie.
In the last minute, the Colts hit a field goal to take a lead with less than a minute to go to take a 16-14 lead.
Cromartie returns a kickoff, which he only did on special occasions, takes it to midfield. Then Sanchez, they get a penalty in there. Sanchez completes a pass, but the Colts make Caldwell makes one of the craziest decisions of all time, calls timeout to give and ends up giving the Jets an extra play. So instead of like a 50-something yard field goal that the Jets were going to miss, Sanchez hits Braylon Edwards one-on-one for like a 20-yard pass, and they hit a chip shot and win the game. And, of course, go to New England the next week and win.
Yeah, Jets win 17-16. The number one game that weekend, though, was the Saturday night game. It was the Beastquake game. Seahawks, the 7-9 Seahawks, beat the Saints, the defending Super Bowl champion Saints, 41-36. A legendary game, legendary play. All right, the number two wild card weekend of the last 30 years was 2013. The fourth game was a Bengals loss snooze fest. Andy Dalton, lots of turnovers, nothing to say there. Number 3 was the 49ers hit a walk-off field goal against the Packers to win 23-20. That was the fourth lead change in the fourth quarter of that game. Number 2, another walk-off field goal. This one, the Saints over the Eagles, 26-24. So we have two walk-offs over there. And how are neither one of those the number one game? Because the number one game was that bonkers Colts comeback against the Chiefs. They were down 38-10 in the third quarter. And won the game.
I mean, that was
Jamal Charles, I think, went out with an injury for the Chiefs.
There's no talk, by the way, of Alex Smith ever playing again. Like, that's just not going to happen, right?
Yeah, very sad how his career sort of ended. But he was a borderline MVP for the Chiefs. The next year, he gets traded because the Chiefs know sort of a similar thing happened to him, frankly, in San Francisco, where he had a great season. He got benched because Harbaugh realized that Kaepernick was better, even though Smith was having a great season. He goes to Kansas City, where again he's great for Andy Reid, and again he gets benched for a backup quarterback who had no on-field evidence yet to prove it, really. But Reid knew what he was doing, obviously, with Mahomes. So he gets traded to Washington, and unfortunately takes that brutal hit, and he's done. Anyways, the number one was this past weekend. Seahawks Eagles is the fourth best game, and it was a game decided by a touchdown, right? So still, I guess, a relatively good game. Obviously better than some of those fourth games I talked about. Third best game was the Titans-Patriots game, which came down to the wire. Second best game, the Texans-Bills game, right? Probably, and then Vikings-Saints number one, or am I being biased?
No, I think that's
fair. You tell me. Yeah. Two overtime walk-off games.
I think people will remember the Bills-Texans game more than any other game just because it was so insane, but it wasn't a great game.
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings-Saints game wasn't a great game in the first half either. These were very exciting games.
The Vikings-Saints game was pretty slow and picked up in the fourth quarter, but there weren't a lot of iconic moments.
Yeah. All right, so those are the best wildcard weekends. Now, let's say what do we have to look forward to in the divisional round? And spoiler alert, none of the years that I just mentioned as having great wildcards, 91, 93, 02, 04, 2010, 13, 19, none of them had good divisional rounds. And the years that had divisional rounds did not have good wildcard rounds. So we're a little spoiled if we expect to get both. But there's only 4 years I want to highlight because the divisional rounds basically sucked in the 90s. You know, maybe you get one game out of four.
Well, the divisional rounds for so many years were about, okay, you won the wild card game, but we're at four. The good teams in the 90s, I think, this, you know, we felt this then, and historically it is borne out, were at such a higher level than the fourth and fifth best teams, and probably the good teams now. There was such a difference between them that going to Dallas, going to San Francisco, going to Green Bay a couple of years felt like an impossible task and was, in fact, an impossible task, right? None of those teams lost, other than to the three of each other, you know, any home game basically the whole decade in the playoffs.
Yeah, now the Vikings did go in 88, which was the strike year, when the Vikings, their scrubs were worse, I guess, because they went 0-3 with their scrubs. So they were 8-7. They go into New Orleans in the first round as underdogs, and they blew the doors off the Superdome. They won 44-10. Then they went into San Francisco in a year that Joe Montana said was the best 49ers team of his career. And they destroyed the 49ers, I think, 36-14 or something like that. Then they go play the NFC East champion Washington in the NFC Championship. And in a game that they lose 17-10 on the last play of the game, Darren Nelson wide open in the end zone drops an easy touchdown that would have sent the game to overtime. So let's hope history repeats itself this year. But yeah, but that was one of the rare times when a wildcard team went into San Francisco or Dallas or Green Bay, I guess, into the 90s and actually pulled off a win. But all right, so here's the top four divisional rounds of the last 30 years, which is also of the last 13 years. And again, your Jets have some quite a role here. So we'll start with 2006. The fourth best game was the Colts beat the Ravens 15-6. Not a great game. The Ravens were down 12-6, but then Steve McNair threw an interception on the Ravens' only drive the rest of the game in Indy territory, so not a very good game. Number three was the Saints beat the Eagles 27-24, but there was a lot of scoring early in this game. The Eagles never reached even their own 40-yard line in the last 11 minutes of this game. So it was 27-24, but it was not very close. Number two was the Bears beat the Seahawks by that same score, 27-24, in overtime. But I don't remember much about this game, and I was looking at the game log. Like, this is about as unexciting as a 27-24 overtime game can be, which I guess what happens when you have the Bears featured. The number one game of that 2006 season divisional round, though, was Chargers and Patriots. Chargers take a 21-13 lead over the Patriots midway through the fourth quarter. Brady drives the Pats right down the field, scores a touchdown and a two-point conversion, game tied at 21. Chargers go three and out. Brady again drives the Pats deep into Charger territory. Koskowski hits a go-ahead field goal, makes it 24-21. Chargers take the ball back, minute remaining. Rivers drives him down. Nate Kaning comes out for a field goal to send the game to overtime. And what does Nate Kaning do?
What Nate Kaning always does, yes.
Yeah, which is crazy because I think when he retired, he was the highest accuracy field goal kicker in NFL history in the regular season. But all he's remembered for is blowing tons of playoff kicks, including in two different games against your Jets. So that's 2006. 2015 is the third best divisional round of the last 30 years. The worst game was the Panthers beat the Seahawks 31-24, but it wasn't really that close. It was 31-14 until the Seahawks scored 10 points late in the fourth quarter, but then they had an onside kick that failed, and so the game ended. Third best game, Pats beat the Chiefs 27-20. Kind of the same idea. The Chiefs were down 14. They scored a touchdown late and missed an onside kick, ends the game. The second best game of 2015 was the Broncos losing 13-12 to the Steelers in the fourth quarter. A seven-minute drive ends with a Broncos touchdown and two-point conversion, giving Denver a 20-13 lead. The Steelers do nothing. The Broncos get the ball back, kick an insurance field goal to make it 23-13 with under a minute remaining. The Steelers drive into Denver territory, kick a field goal immediately to make it a one-score game. Then they miss an onside kick. So that's three games in a row that were decided by a touchdown, but all three, it was, you know, a team scored late, missed an onside kick. So none of those were that great. However, the other game that weekend was probably, I'd say, the second-best divisional round game of the last 30 years was that Cardinals-Packers game, which was featured on All or Nothing that year. Keith, I'm sure you remember this game, right?
If hypothetically I was focusing on something else for a second, tell me which game you're talking about.
All right. The Cardinals-Packers game. So the Packers fail on fourth down on their own 25-yard line with 2.5 minutes to go, down 17-13. The game looks over. But
this is 08, right?
The Cardinals go – this is 2015.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the Warner Cardinals team.
No. No, okay. But no, this was, yeah. And then, but the Cardinals go 3 and out, and the Packers use their final timeout, an incomplete pass, and the 2 minute warning. And so the Cardinals settle for a field goal, and it's 20-13, but Rodgers gets the ball back with just under 2 minutes to go. Rodgers is sacked. He's down to 4th and 20 from his own 4-yard line, less than a minute remaining. And what happens next on 4th and 20? Jeff Janis, 60-yard Hail Mary. What happens on the last play of regulation? Jeff Janis again, 41-yard Hail Mary, touchdown, tie the game, send it to overtime. Cardinals fans completely distraught. On the first play of overtime, Carson Palmer hits Larry Fitz in the flat. He goes 75 yards, and 2 plays later scores a winning touchdown. Cardinals win the game 26-20. Bonkers, bonkers game. I mean, bonkers last 2 minutes of the game in overtime, basically.
Yeah, that was an all-timer.
The Packers just, yeah. So that's just incredible. So even though the other three games were all, you know, not really that close, even though they're all one-score games, that game drags it up. Number two, the second-best divisional round of the last 30 years was 2017, just 2 years ago. The Pats blew out the Titans. 35-14. The Titans had won that playoff game with Marcus Mariota in the first round, and then they lost pretty easily to the Patriots, so not much to say there. Number three was that Jaguars-Steelers game, which just had nonstop scoring, 38 fourth-quarter points in this game, and the Steelers lost only 45-42, but it wasn't really that close. Every time the Steelers would pull within one score, the Jaguars immediately responded with a score of their own on the very next drive, and it was only a three-point game at the end because Juju Smith-Schuster hit a touchdown on the last play of the game. So, that was 2017, the third best game. The second best game was Nick Foles' first playoff game. The Eagles are home dogs. Carson Wentz gets hurt in December. Foles looks terrible in the playoffs, in the end of the regular season, excuse me. But in his first playoff game, escapes with a 15-10 victory over Atlanta. Atlanta was on their own 2-yard line in the last minute of the game and could not score.
On their own two?
Yes.
Okay.
No, excuse me. They were on the Eagles two. Yeah, sorry. And then number one, of course, the Minneapolis Miracle. Everyone remembers the last play of this game, but like this whole game was bonkers.
Yeah, I don't think anybody remembers a single play of the game at this point, though, besides that play.
Yeah. Okay, so very briefly, the Vikings lead 17-0 at halftime. It looks like such a blowout that I actually leave where I'm watching and I go watch somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But the Saints come back. It's 17-14 early in the fourth. With the Vikings holding it onto a 20-14 lead with five minutes to go, the Saints block a punt. And they get the ball deep in Vikings territory, and they score a touchdown with 3 minutes to go, take their first lead of the game, 21-20. On the ensuing drive, Kai Forbath, who already hit a 49-yard field goal earlier in the quarter, hits a 53-yard field goal with a minute and a half to go. Kai Forbath, you know, if not for the Minneapolis Miracle, would be remembered as, I mean, just unbelievably clutch. A 49-yard and a 53-yard field goal in the fourth quarter of a playoff game. Each of them absolutely clutch. They take the lead with a minute and a half to go, but it's too much time for Drew Brees. He drives them down the field. The Saints, Will Lutz comes out, kicks a field goal with 29 seconds remaining. But the rest, as they say, is history. Diggs, sideline, touchdown, unbelievable. Minneapolis Miracle. Number one, though, is 2003. 2003, all four games decided by one score, although one of them wasn't very close. The Chiefs lost to the Colts 38-31. But the Chiefs scored a touchdown to pull within 38-31 with 4 minutes to go, and then the Colts ran the ball the rest of the game. Number three, the Patriots beat the Titans. By the way, do you remember the Patriots playing the Titans 3 times in the playoffs this century?
No. Like, what was your favorite moment from the three? I mean, this one I remember, but the first two.
Yeah. Well, I remember the last one as being a blowout, but I totally forgot about this game in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a good game. The Patriots hit a go-ahead field goal with 4 minutes to go.
Yeah.
To make it 17-14. The Titans drive down deep into Patriots territory. You know, they're in range for a 40-something yard field goal, but they have intentional grounding, which is, you know, loss of yards and loss of down.
Yeah.
And so they're pushed all the way back to the 43. And rather than attempting a 60-yard field goal, they go for it on fourth down and they fail. And so the Pats escape with a win. So that was also a good game. Number two in 2003 was David Akers hits a field goal at the end of regulation for the Eagles to tie the Packers 17-17. Packers get the ball in overtime. Favre throws an interception, and Akers comes out, hits another field goal. Eagles win 20-17. And number one that season was the Panthers, who would go on to the Super Bowl, upset the Rams 29-13 in a bonkers double overtime game. Do you remember that game? Or are you still in Israel?
The Panthers-Rams game? Yes, yeah. I do remember it.
Panthers are up 11 with less than 3 minutes to go. The Rams score a touchdown, convert a two-point conversion, convert an onside kick, and hit a field goal on the last play of regulation to tie the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that never happens.
This is Bulger DeLome.
You need the touchdown. Yeah.
The guy who sat next to me at NBC for 4 years, nice guy, but he called Jake DeLome Jake Delhomie always.
As a joke?
As a joke, but he only said it. And it drove me insane. And Jake Delhomie. All right, now you have to think about that.
Yeah. Anyways, so this game goes to overtime. Both kickers miss a miss a field goal in overtime. We go to a double overtime, and on the first play of double overtime, Jake Delhomme, which, by the way, sounds like Patrick Mahomes in that stupid State Farm commercial, hits Steve Smith with a 69-yard nice walk-off touchdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Steve Smith was fun.
Yeah, he still is.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So so those are my top divisional rounds. So hopefully we can match that this week. But let's jump to the games. And by the way, I also ranked all the conference championship weekends, so we can discuss that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week. And we ranked the Super Bowls just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
All right, so let's make some picks.
All right. So let's start with the first game of the weekend, which is the Vikings.
Did we make million-dollar picks last week, though? $100 million picks last week?
No. I think I would have picked I would have put money on the Vikings, but I did not do so.
What's insane is that we could probably make college football picks still next week if we record on Sunday night or Monday. Because this championship is never happening.
Oh, is next?
It's
yeah,
crazy.
It's next Monday. Yeah. Yeah. Listen, these guys are stupid.
I think, it's funny. Like, not one of those guys is now been in class for, I mean, I understand, you know, they, depending on the school, they might not have class, but.
Yeah. All right. So, so here's one thing I did, by the way. So, did you read on the Reddit on the?
By the way, Joe
Reddit,
Burrow.
Possibly?
I don't know if people know this. Joe Burrow, because he came from another school, he was enrolled online, and he has never been on the LSU campus, or had never been on the LSU campus at the start of this season. The Heisman Trophy winner has like never been to his own school.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
In like one online graduate class.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, it just shows the farce of the
I know, but at least some of these guys, like, you go to Ohio State, you go to Michigan, at least, some of these guys are legitimately, they might be going to class, but they're, like, legitimately part of the college, you know? Like, there's no football the second half, you know, like, they're actually doing stuff, but that is insane. Like, he's 23, he's older than everybody else there, he went to college at OSU, he's never been in a classroom in LSU. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Too bad I couldn't do basket weaving like Joe Namath. Mm-hmm. All right, so one thing I did, I looked at the quarterback / head coach duo in each of these eight remaining teams.
Yes.
And obviously, there's much more that's relevant, but I ranked each one from one to five.
Okay.
And so, do you want to guess? So, which is the weakest quarterback coach
of all eight?
Yeah,
all right, so let's just say them. Zimmer, Cousins, Garoppolo, Shanahan, Rodgers, LaFleur, Wilson, Carroll, Tannehill, Vrabel. Could have gotten Tannehill, Vrabel, pretty low down on those odds a few weeks ago. Reed, Mahomes, Jackson, Harbaugh, and Watson, O'Brien. It's tricky because, O'Brien's clearly the worst coach, but Deshaun is so great.
Yeah. So I think you have to say
Titans last. And, you know, maybe Vrabel's incredible, but I think right now Tannehill Vrabel has to be eight there.
Yeah, you know, Vrabel, like, he's getting a little bit too much credit here. Like, he took over a 9-7 team, and they've gone 9-7 each of his two years. So I'm not saying that he's doing a bad job, but we don't really have evidence that he's doing a great job. So, you know, he's a slightly above average coach. He's better than O'Brien for sure, and we haven't seen enough from LaFleur, but you can't put him ahead of any of the other coaches so far. And Tannehill, you can't put him ahead of any of the other quarterbacks. I mean, he's had a great few weeks, but including sort of the larger body, you can't look. Cousins had a whole great season, but has a longer track record than Tannehill, and obviously just had a great playoff game. Tannehill did, you know, what did he
are
think,
we
like,
valuing
this
in
week?
This hypothetical experiment? Are we valuing quarterback and coach at 50% each? I think we have.
Yeah.
To.
So So that's what I did. So yeah. So I have Tannehill and Vrabel and sort of last, and then Watson and O'Brien next. Watson is, you know, much better, but O'Brien is by far
is the eighth best
coach.
Sure,
yeah. Next, I have Garoppolo and Shanahan. Now, there's a big gap after that. Now, Garoppolo, you know, again, other than Tannehill, is the least proven of all these quarterbacks. You know, might be very good, but you can't say there's anybody that you wouldn't rather have.
No, it's fair. This is fair. Now, it's possible Shanahan ends up becoming like a great coach, but right now he's just very good.
Oh, and I think Shanahan is a great coach. You know, I gave Shanahan four, and the only coach who I gave five stars to was Harbaugh. So Shanahan is a very good coach, I think. But honestly, all these are good quarterback coach combinations. Unfortunately for San Francisco, they also have the best defense remaining. Green Bay, I have Basically tied with San Francisco. Rodgers, I gave 4 stars to.
Now, you understand that this is a very hot take. Like, most people would have Cousins Zimmer at about 6 or 7.
Yeah,
Zimmer doesn't get a ton of respect, and you know Cousins doesn't get a lot of respect. So to say, Rodgers and LaFleur, now you want to say, all right, LaFleur is completely unproven, so he's like a 0 out of 10.
Well, that's the point, yeah. And Cousins has been much better than Rodgers in the regular season for, 4 years in a row now? Let's be honest. I would still rather have Rodgers. I agree. I'm not disputing that. But there, you could make an argument in both directions at quarterback. You can't make an argument for LaFleur over Zimmer yet, I don't think.
Okay.
So, but whatever. Cousins, Zimmer, Rodgers, LaFleur, and Garoppolo, Shanahan are all sort of in the next batch. And then the top three are Jackson Harbaugh, Mahomes, Reed, and Wilson Carroll.
I think Wilson Carroll is a clear three. Just to me, I think Carroll has slipped. He's not on the same level as
I don't love Carroll as a coach either, but the reality is that,
he wins every single year, overperforming
every single year, and so he has to get some credit for that, even if I don't necessarily think that he deserves it. Wilson, to me, is the best. There's no quarterback I'd rather have right now.
If you think Wilson's the best coach, then maybe that's team's number one. To me, they're three. But I think I have Mahomes Reed at one. I think that's easy. Yeah, no, the truth is it's 1A, 1B. Because I think, Harbaugh, Reed. Yeah, no, actually, I'm going to say Reed Mahomes at 1B and Jackson Harbaugh 1A.
Yeah.
With the caveat of will Lamar, he hasn't played a playoff game yet,
Exactly. That's the only issue there. Harbaugh, to me, is the best coach. Wilson, to me, is the best quarterback. Mahomes and Reed are second best for both.
There are 8 teams remaining, 7 of whom were not there last year. The only team that's returned is to the final 8, or the Chiefs, meaning 15 of the 32, essentially half the teams in the league, have made it to week 2 of the NFL playoffs in the last 2 years.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good, except what if you're... So it's but it also shows you, there's no rebuilding.
The Jets? Yeah.
There's no rebuilding. Half the league has made it to the... has made it, either gotten a bye or won a playoff game in the last 2 years.
Yeah, well, San Francisco was an 8-8 team coming into the year, right? What was, I guess, the realistic expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the best team in the NFC. And you see this a lot of times when a defense sort of, spikes out of nowhere is where you really see these explosions.
Yeah, which is not sustainable year to year, which is why the same teams don't make the playoffs always, because the good defensive teams, which is why I'd be a little more nervous if I was a Pats fan, even if they re-signed Brady, that they're not going to have the number one defense by a million miles again next year. I mean, even the loss, their defense was great. They allowed 14 points to a red-hot team. I don't think... if you are a Jets fan or a Browns fan or a Detroit Lions fan, hearing that stat, it's depressing because every team is close and you guys are not close.
Well, are the Browns not close? I mean, a lot more people picked them to go to the Super Bowl than the 49ers.
I know, but they didn't. They had ended with the same record as the Jets, right? So,
yeah. I mean, the Jets went above 500 with their starting quarterback, didn't they?
The Jets went 7-6 with Darnold. Correct.
Yeah. So
against one of the easiest schedules of all time.
You extrapolate that. That's 9-7. That's what the Titans did, and the Titans only went 9-7 because Houston didn't try in Week 17.
True.
All right. Let me ask you a question, which, as a guy whose team hasn't been in the playoffs for a while, and you might not remember. But do you have, because I don't know if this is only me as a Vikings fan or if every team feels this way, but do you feel when your team's playing playoff games like they're always fumbling the ball? Do you always feel like, just get down?
I feel that way in every big game, yeah.
Okay. All right, so I was curious about this because the Vikings just seem to always fumble in the playoffs. And so I wanted to actually put some evidence to it. So I went back and looked. So first of all, I was looking the average. Now, I didn't see for 2019, but I assume the numbers haven't changed. But in an average NFL game, there's about 2.3 fumbles total. There's about 1.2 fumbles per team. And each team loses a fumble half that time because fumbles are complete luck in terms of who recovers. So in other words, each team loses a fumble a little less than 0.6. About half a fumble per game per team is what you have for lost fumbles, right?
Yeah.
The Vikings, in 22 playoff games in the last 30 years, in those 22 games, they have 39 fumbles, which is almost 2 per game, which is, more than double the almost double the average, and they've lost 24. They've lost more than one fumble per game. Now, part of this is it's sort of we're mixing up, causation and or cause and effect here, because maybe the reason they've lost so many of these games is because, right, in those 22 games, they're 8-14, and maybe part of the reason that they've lost, 2/3 of their playoff games is because they're losing so many of their fumbles, which, again, is sort of luck, but they're losing, 65% of them. You look back at their playoff losses. Now, they lost the fumble on the first play on the Thielen fumble early on against the Saints this week. Now, did you see that stupid stat about the other three teams to lose a fumble on their first drive of the game?
No, tell me it.
Okay, the last three teams, the only three teams in the last decade to lose a fumble on their opening playoff drive all won the Super Bowl that year.
Oh, wow.
So it was 2012, 2013, 2017, I think. So, yeah. So maybe Thielen fumbled it on purpose. But, yeah. But so that was actually the Vikings' only fumble in this game. But they had so many almost fumbles, obviously. The one by Delvin Cook when his knee was down and when the Saints returned it for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
That play, I ran out of the room. I screamed the F word. I punched the wall as hard as I could, and I started crying. So,
and this, to be fair, you were drunk.
Not at that point. No, not yet. I was on the way. And my dad calls me back. He's like, wait, maybe his knee's down. And I thought my dad is just being his delusional self. And by the way, my wife, my beloved wife, she takes a nap for the first two hours of the game, as she does every Sunday.
But you had to watch the kids?
And then she No, she takes a nap. That's what she does.
From one so you have the nanny. You have the nanny on Sundays. I forgot.
No, we don't have a nanny on
so
Sundays.
So you're watching? Oh, so you mean the kids are, it's every man for themselves?
Yeah, but the oldest one can handle himself, and the younger two generally take naps.
Oh, okay, fine.
But their naps end at 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, at 3 o'clock, my wife comes down from her nap, and she's like, all right, I'm leaving. And she just leaves.
Leaves with the kids?
So well, she took the oldest one. He went somewhere.
No, you got to take all three kids. During a playoff game? No, my wife would.
No, the point is she left the baby, which is the worst
that's
one.
That's insane. No, I would not have.
He doesn't know what's going on. And she's like, what are you doing? You're watching a football game. Which is like so annoying because it's not like she was taking a nap. Yeah. You know, like it's whatever. It was whatever. So my dad and I watched this game with my just turned 3-year-old son the whole time. And it's cute, but he doesn't have sort of the social or emotional awareness to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, at one point, my dad yelled at him for making noise. It's actually really cute. So he went up to like a couch and he climbed behind the pillow and he hid so we couldn't see his body at all.
Yeah.
So it was a little cute, but I feel bad. Like the influence, you know, like you don't want your children to see things. Like
no, it's 100% your wife's fault. Like you cannot leave.
Yeah. Well, obviously,
you're not supposed to watch a baby. It's one thing if you left a 6-year-old who was like asking questions and you're like,
I know, I begged her, I said, please take him, you're just driving somewhere, let him sit in the car.
It's crazy. And I always say that. My wife will take the kid, to her credit.
Yeah, no, my wife did not. She's like you had 2 hours without the kids, as if, you know, she was not napping while they were napping also at that time, but whatever. Mm-hmm. So I lost that one. So Ellie got to witness. Also, Kobe was with us, my second son was with us earlier in the game, and when the Vikings scored the touchdown, so my kids, whenever the Vikings score a touchdown, they get 6 kabooms, which means I throw them in the air all the way up to the ceiling.
Okay.
But I was a little too aggressive in my kabooming for Kobe, and I hurt his leg, so he was crying.
And he's on the IR
earlier in the game.
The thing is, if you're really responsible with them, your wife won't let you keep them the next time there's a game.
Yeah, well, maybe if she saw the bottle that was being drained at a prodigious rate, she wouldn't have. But and I normally
she'd been like, "Don't worry, honey, I'll just drive him over to my mom."
Yeah, I don't like any substances during Vikings. Oh, Ayers went to the city to see his cousins. That's what he did. I don't like any substances during Vikings games. I need to focus. But I was such an emotional wreck that I needed alcohol to try and soothe me or to calm me down a little bit. So I went through these Vikings games, and they've all ended in like, so the Vikings have only not had a fumble in 4 of their 22
playoff
games.
A lost fumble?
And guess what? No, a fumble. Yeah. So they then there was two other games where they recovered all their fumbles.
Mm-hmm.
So, but of the 4 games where they never fumbled the ball, guess what? They won all 4. So it's, again, it's a little bit cause and effect is being a little bit mixed up here. So in their other 18 games, they had 39 fumbles, which is over 2 fumbles a game. And, you know, big surprise that they went 4 and 14 in those games. So, the only time that they've lost a fumble and won a game before this past week was in 1997 when they lost 2 fumbles. They had fumbled 4 times against the Giants, lost 2 of them, but still managed to win. So they hadn't won a playoff game in which they had a fumble until the Saints game yesterday. So anyways, that's all my fumble talk. So let's jump into the game, though. What's your pick for Vikings 49ers?
I have the... One second. I got to answer the door here.
You said on the podcast last week that you were taking the Vikings, the Saints to win and the Saints to cover, and you didn't give much of an explanation. But then in our pools, you picked the Vikings to cover. So you're a weasel.
Close the door.
Oh, he literally went to answer the door. He's not even here.
I said I have to open the door. Yes, I am taking the Niners to win the points for the Vikings.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same. It's just I do think I told you in the beginning of the season the team I was most afraid of in the NFC was the Bears. Well, the 49ers supplant the Bears in that respect because the 49ers have the best defense. And, their offense is at least as good, if not better, than the Bears' offense was last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Shanahan versus Nagy and Garoppolo over Trubisky, obviously. The Zimmer, I think, probably had the best coached game that I can remember as a Vikings fan in my life against the Saints. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about sort of, you know, gameplay decisions, but schematic decisions ahead of the game. So, as an example, the Vikings have two elite defensive ends in Everson Griffin, a little bit past his prime, but, you know, was a Pro Bowler for a handful of years over the last five years. Probably gone at the end of the season. And then Danielle Hunter, who's in the conversation for best edge rusher in the NFL. So what do they do with two elite edge rushers? They played them almost the entire game inside. They pulled them inside, played them as tackles, because they had scouted when the Falcons went into New Orleans and won 26-9 a few weeks ago that the Saints, this interior of their offensive line was much weaker than their tackles, who were really, really good. So they bring these guys inside, and it works like a charm. Griffin had his first multiple sack game, I would have to guess, in at least 2 years. And Danielle Hunter had the strip sack he had a number of big plays, but he had the strip sack of Breeze that, you know, was one of the many deciding plays of this game when New Orleans was deep in Vikings territory and was looking like they were going to possibly take a lead late in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. So that was brilliant strategy number one. I mean, taking both your defensive ends and playing them inside the whole game, just, you know, incredibly risky, by the way. If it doesn't work, everybody's trashing him for that. The Vikings were without two of their top three corners coming into this game. So they took Andrew Sendejo, their backup safety, who was a backup safety for the Eagles, got cut earlier in the year, got brought back to Minnesota. I figured just to sort of like, we like you, or in the club, in the locker room here, and you're a nice guy. He's also a very smart guy. They bring him in, and they played him as the nickel corner in this game. He covered one-on-one.
He said he had never played corner in his life, right?
Yeah. And he had a fantastic game. By the way, Anthony Barr was covering Mike Thomas one-on-one in this game. And I was like, what are you doing? But that worked also. So every roll of the dice that Zimmer had, and I've pointed out before that Zimmer historically has done very well against Drew Brees and the Saints. San Francisco is an interesting matchup. The Vikings and the 49ers basically play the same offensive systems. They both, it's the same personnel. It's all the guys in San Francisco were, you know, frankly, Shanahan and Mike LaFleur. These guys were all with Kirk Cousins in Washington. They all learned under Mike Shanahan, which is where Gary Kubiak, who's the Vikings offensive assistant head coach, whatever they call him. So these teams, they both do a lot of play action. They do a lot of zone scheme. They do a lot of rollouts. Like, it's going to be like sort of, you know, the Spider-Man looking at the Spider-Man emoji on offense. I'd rather have Cousins than Garoppolo. But the question is, like, which batch of weapons would you prefer? Because I think you can make an argument either way. Like, is Kittle more valuable a weapon than Cousins or Diggs or Rudolph? I think you can fairly make that point. Deebo Samuel, another elite weapon. Emmanuel Sanders, a good slot receiver, much better than the Vikings' third receiver. Although I guess if we're including tight ends, then it's sort of Sanders against Rudolph. It's still, you know, so it's at running back, obviously the Vikings have an advantage, Dalvin Cook, but the 49ers had, you know, an elite running game all year. Just, you know, they brought in three different guys to do it. So I really don't know what to think. I think that this game, if the Vikings play the way that they can play, I think this is a really close game, and I think it's a toss-up either way. You'd still have to pick San Francisco because of the home field advantage and the extra week of rest. I think Dee Ford is back. Everybody is back for San Francisco. Their pass rush is better than New Orleans is. New Orleans, I mean, the Vikings offensive line, in their previous important game in Week 16, they had their worst game of the year against the Packers. They got absolutely murdered, and that's why the Vikings lost that game. Kirk Cousins was barely touched in this game.
Yeah, no, they did. Yeah, he's going to get hit this week.
But we assumed he was going to get hit last week. I mean, do you remember what I said on the podcast last week? Who did I say was the most important player in the game after Cousins? I said it was Cameron Jordan. We didn't mention his name all day.
Well, we weren't the announcers, but that's true.
Yeah. The Vikings offensive line just had an incredible, incredible game. And you need that because you can't have Dalvin Cook or Kyle Rudolph having to do a lot of pass blocking, because then you have nobody down the field. You know, one, like, they did that stupid play where they did the wide receiver option pass with Diggs early in the game against the Saints, and it was especially dumb because they had both receivers crossing behind the line of scrimmage. So you have Thielen and Diggs behind the line of scrimmage, Diggs with the ball in his hands. Who's he throwing it to? Rudolph is double covered in the middle of the field, and then the running back was being pushed out of bounds on the sideline. There was literally no receiver downfield, so you can't do that play with no receivers on the field. And as you've pointed out, the Vikings never have three receivers on the field. So the Vikings are going to have to get Rudolph or Cook or somebody. I want Cook to get the ball in the flat more. They should be passing the ball to Dalvin Cook 10 times a game. I don't understand why they don't do that more the way like the Giants do with Saquon or the Chargers do with that.
Saints did with Kamara. It wasn't super successful.
Yeah, but the Vikings are very good at stopping in particular. Like, I also mentioned that on the podcast last week. I wasn't worried about Kamara. I was worried about Jared Cook. Jared Cook, by the way, was always open in this game.
Cook's great.
Yeah, he's so old that, you know, he and I don't understand why, because like Harrison Smith or whoever was covering him would be 5 yards back on him. He's old and slow. He's not going to run past you. So I don't understand what that was about. But I think I'm going to take the points also, but there is definitely a risk of the Vikings just completely no-showing and San Francisco winning this game like 17-6. I don't see an offensive blowout from San Francisco unless it's a shootout in both directions, which, you know, San Francisco did that against Seattle. They did it against New Orleans for sure. So that's a possibility. But if San Francisco completely, if the Vikings offense completely no-shows, there's that possibility. And that's the circumstance under which you'd want to take San Francisco to cover. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to take the Vikings to cover. I'm going to take the under on this game. I think it's 45.5.
I believe, yeah, it's somewhere in the, yeah, I went under in all four games for the our playoff pool.
Big win.
By the way, if anybody.
Oh, wait, no, I think the Vikings, did the Vikings hit the under or did they push when they got the touchdown in overtime? What was the under? Was it 46?
I'm not sure what it was.
Okay. All right, so let's get to the next game, Titans-Ravens. This Bill Simmons has become like the biggest Titans bobo in the world. I don't understand why. Again, this was an 8-7 team that got lucky to get in the playoffs. They beat a Patriots team that was going backwards after jumping out to an 8-0 start to the year. I don't see any circumstance in which the Ravens don't just blow the doors off of them.
I think the Ravens do blow the doors off them.
Yeah. This game's going to suck. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. Well, although, do I hope I'm wrong? Because I want Lamar Jackson to have a good game. But, you know, I just, the Titans offense, like, everybody's making a big deal about Derrick Henry. Like, the Patriots had a successful game plan. They held they held Tennessee's offense to 14 points. Like, that's why, like, everybody, like, we were arguing about, is Derrick Henry overrated, underrated in the chat. Like, the Titans offense had a bad game against the Patriots. So if you want to let the running back run for 180 yards and your quarterback throws for 50 yards, that's going to be a success most of the time for the other team. Like, you need more than 230 yards, 240 yards of offense to win an NFL playoff game. And you need more than 14 points. So if the Titans offense repeats what it did against the Ravens, they're going to lose. They need Ryan Tannehill to show up. They need A.J. Brown, who I think had one catch for 4 yards, to show up. Baltimore's defense, its secondary is not as good as the Pats' secondary, so it should show up a little bit. But I'm going to have the Ravens winning this game, like, I'll say 34-17.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's 42-21.
Yeah. All right. So
no field goals.
Page.
Titans don't kick field goals, if you remember, except for I guess they didn't. Did they kick one in the Patriots game? No. No, they just scored touchdowns.
No.
So they've kicked one field goal since November. Early November.
Oh, is that
early November?
That?
I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, one in like the last 8 or 9 games or something.
Oh wow. All right. Number three game.
It's funny because the Titans are like the most closely associated with like boring field goals over the last 20 years, right? They're a field goal team, right? They've always had good kickers like Baronis, even Al Del Greco. Do you remember? Yeah. See, you weren't a big football guy when you were a kid, and you didn't really have
Al Del Greco. Of course,
you remember the commercials I'm asking about.
Of course. Al Del Greco.
There used to be a commercial where it would be like ranking the five greatest players in NFL history. And it would be like Montana, Dan Marino, and then number one would always be Al Del Greco. No,
I don't remember.
They were commercials.
But also, you have to remember, I was watching Fox and NBC and
NFC. Pre Fox, my man.
CBS and yeah.
No, I was watching every game.
Pre Fox. Fox got the NFL package in '93.
93, really?
Yeah.
No, I definitely remember. I don't know if this was. I don't remember. I don't remember which what the product was for the commercials.
All right. So let's get to the Sunday. So the NFL moves the games to the traditional, not traditional, but even that's relatively new, but they move the games to 3 and 6:30, which is where they moved the conference championship games to a couple of years ago. I assume they're going to gradually do this. They're going to do this with the wild card round as well, right?
The 3 and 6:30, I think, has been like 10, 12 years at least, I think.
Not in the second round.
No, this is the first year for that.
In the conference championships.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, why stick the games at 1 and 4? It's just the tradition of the regular season. But, like, you want the games later in the day, higher ratings, right? Mm-hmm. Makes sense for everybody.
Yeah.
Now, Simmons and other non-Sabbath observant Jews have long argued that the conference championships should be pushed to Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. Each gets its own game.
Which
it's all about TV. If they thought they could get more viewers on a Saturday night, they would.
Well, I think part of the issue is, but like certainly, if you go to the game, you'd prefer that, because if you go to one of the championship games, you do not get to see the other game.
If you go to the first game, you could be home in time for this for the second game, second half.
Second, okay, but you miss half of the second to last football game of the year. That's not ideal.
Ideal, I agree.
And if your team won, you want to see who you're playing. If your team lost, you don't care, obviously. What I would propose the NFL do is what they did this year in the first round. Put the AFC on Saturday and put the NFC on Sunday. That way there's no unfairness about an extra day of rest in either direction.
Yeah.
right? There's no unfairness from round one to round two. Have both wildcard games in the AFC, and hopefully it should be all three once they add a third wildcard team. Put all three put a triple header on Saturday, the first round, double header on Saturday, the second round, and the AFC championship on Saturday, the third round. All those games on Saturday, because the AFC has the smaller markets generally. Put all the NFC games on Sunday, three games in a row, and then, okay, I guess technically the AFC has 15 days before the Super Bowl instead of 14, but that doesn't really matter. Who says no to this idea?
No, I like it. Yeah. I mean, it is a great day, that Sunday, but yeah, I guess it's overwhelming. The game should stand alone on its own day. I mean, it's the second and third most watched TV events of the year by far at this point. Do you see 90?
Are the two conference championship
games?
Yeah,
I mean, it has been for many years, you know, that they passed the Oscars. Yeah. But now, I mean, now like the NFL wildcard round has passed the Oscars because that had slipped.
Yeah.
93 of the top 100 TV shows this year in 2019 were sports. And the rest were like the Thanksgiving Day Parade. Like it was one TV show.
The Thanksgiving Day Parade is getting ratings?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Right. I guess it's getting such big ratings that even like the channel it's most watched on is a big deal.
I think it's like it's on everyone's TVs just because like your TV's on while you're cooking, but nobody's actively sitting there and watching it, are they?
No. Well, my kids like watching the floats. And we did take them there when we were in New York. We used to take...
Yeah, it's a miserable... First of all parades suck, but especially it's cold. It's, you know, you're standing behind a bunch of people. Yeah. It's not good. Yeah. The only time I took my kid is when my office was on.
Yeah, I know. If you know, if you have a friend who has an office with a good... You know, my wife did that a few times. I also think watching the balloons be deflated is cool for kids. We did that once, too.
But the inflated the night before is like a traditional thing that people like to do also.
But deflated, like if you're at the parade, you just stand there for an extra 20 minutes, they start, and it ends up in like one of those small like rolling garbage cans that's tiny from this huge thing. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so let's jump to the Sunday games. Mm-hmm. So we start, by the way, interesting that the Seahawks have the bad cleanup 2 weeks in a row. I don't know.
Well, first of all, they didn't think it would be the Seahawks. This was supposed to be, you know, because people, they thought it would be Saints-Packers. And this would be in Seahawks-Niners would be the two games.
Sorry, guys. Yeah. All right, so we start with Houston-Kansas City. I think this game is going to be closer than everybody else seems to think it is. Like, Houston has J.J. Watt back, which I think matters a lot. Now, granted, it was against the Bills.
No, the Chiefs are going to blow the doors off the Texans. Do you realize...
Now, again, history shows we usually get blowouts in this round if we had a good wild card.
Do you realize that all these teams are like pretty good DVOA wise? I think the Packers are the second worst team remaining. The Texans are the 22nd team in the league DVOA. Like, this is barely a playoff team that beat a very mediocre Bills team that didn't play anybody.
Yes, no, that's fair. But there were moments when we thought that
if the Chiefs beat
Texans
the Texans by three
this year,
and the Ravens, you know, destroy the Titans on the other way, then the Ravens are going to kill the Chiefs. Like the Chiefs need to show me something this week.
Lamar Jackson was so good this year that everybody forgot about what Patrick Mahomes did the year before, and Patrick Mahomes was so good in 2018 that everybody forgot about what Deshaun Watson did.
100%. And now Deshaun Watson never hit the high highs of throwing every pass as a 70-yard touchdown to Will Fuller like he did for a month.
Yeah.
Since then, he's still amazing for a play here and there, but he's much more Favre-ish now than Aaron Rodgers, right?
They have probably the worst running game of the remaining teams. Houston does. They have, you know, if Will Fuller's healthy, I guess they have decent receivers, but they don't, you know, Darren Fells gets touchdowns, but he, like, other than Nook, they don't really have great weapons. It's really just the Deshaun Watson game. Like, that, he has to carry this team offensively. Mm-hmm. And he does. He's their leading rusher. Speaking of leading rushers, by the way, one more thing I want to say about the Vikings game. Like, the only thing the Saints had on offense that entire game was the Taysom Hill bullshit. Taysom Hill had the longest pass of the game for them. He had their touchdown. He had their only touchdown reception, other than the one that he threw himself. He led the team in rushing. Like, he did everything.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of contract does he get in the offseason?
Taysom Hill, he's 30. He's not like a kid.
Okay. Well, Cordell Stewart, though, by the time he finally left Pittsburgh.
Give Taysom Hill a contract, you will regret it. Like, if you pay him anything, you'll regret it.
Is he 30? I thought he was like 28.
I think he's 30. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know, because he did like a Mormon mission or something. Yes. But he's still blindingly fast.
But what's his position? Offense, what are you paying him to do?
Well, that's the question. So like the
he'll be 30. He'll be 30 next season. He's 29.
By the way, the fact that the Saints had to rely on all these gimmicks in their first round playoff game, like everybody's talking about how like they were 13-3, the best wildcard team ever to lose, and you know the first team to win 13 games consecutive years, not go to the Super Bowl, blah, blah, blah. Like, they pulled out everything in the kitchen sink offensively in round one, and it still wasn't enough. So even if they had managed to sneak out that game and win, I wouldn't, you know, going into Green Bay, I'm not that impressed with Green Bay, we know that. But, like, I think San Francisco, in a sense, is almost a little bit luckier this way, or less lucky this way.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Taysom Hill threw 6 passes in the regular season. Yeah. What were his rushing stats? Like, I mean, he's fine as, like, a 53rd guy, as, like, a jackknife type guy, but he's not, I don't think.
Well, but I don't know. Like, why couldn't you? Now, the funny thing is, actually, Sean Payton, they said this on Fox during the broadcast. Sean Payton reached out to Tim Tebow a few years ago.
He had six receiving touchdowns. Listen, he is a useful player, but you can't pay him to be a star because he is a jack of all trades. And, you know, he's not a returner, right? He doesn't return. He stopped returning kicks.
Although
he plays special teams, but he doesn't really return kicks
coverage.
Anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would think that there'd be a way to, you know, could you use him as an option quarterback? I don't know.
He's never thrown an NFL touchdown.
Yeah, he did. In the playoff.
Yeah, I'm saying. In the regular season, he's never thrown.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Was the 50-yarder a touchdown? Or did Kamara run it on the next play? I'm getting confused now. All right, anyways, doesn't matter. All right, so our pick here. So you said Kansas City to blow the doors off Houston. I'm going to say this is going to be a closer game. I'm going to give Kansas City the win, let's say 30-24. I'll give Kansas City a win, but I'll pick Houston to cover. Let's get to the Seattle-Green Bay game. So annoying to me that, you know, in my opinion, there's 3 good teams in the NFC. There's 3 less good teams, and the 3 better teams are on one side of the bracket, just the way it worked out. Seattle and Green Bay, one of these teams guaranteed to go to the NFC Championship and hopefully host it, if I have any say in the matter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these teams have played some legendary playoff games in the last few years, obviously.
Yeah.
And this could be another one. I think these are basically both 8-8 teams with elite quarterbacks. And Seattle's quarterback is more elite right now. And also, Seattle, like, okay, they have no running back. And that's a problem because, you know, the Packers have a much better running game. But DK Metcalf is a stud right now.
Yeah, DK Metcalf. Everyone who didn't get, you know, teams like the Patriots that did not hit on their receiver, or a team like the Jets or the Vikings that didn't really. Did you guys draft a receiver late?
Late?
In this draft? Like, we didn't draft a receiver.
You mean early? We did not draft
you
one
did,
early.
Did you draft a receiver late? I know you didn't draft one early.
At all?
Yeah.
I don't remember if they did in like the 6th
okay,
round.
Okay, but you don't,
like
none
that.
Of your guys.
Well, yeah, they did. They did. BC Johnson.
Okay, Johnson,
pick.
Okay.
And he's their wide receiver 3
right
now.
Right.
So,
but I'm
yeah.
saying, like, you'll regret it because all these guys ended up, you know, Brown and Metcalf.
I think Metcalf's muscles were too big. People thought he was sort of like a cartoon.
I mean, listen, if you told me, like,
his hands are supposed to be blocks.
It's weird because one of the strange things about what rookie receivers is, while they traditionally, it's one of the only positions where you could struggle as a rookie and still become good, and rookie receivers usually have a ceiling, there are also a lot of stories of, like, you know, a lot of history of rookie receivers petering out after having a great season, maybe because you have to really.
Yeah, I made a chart upon request of the best rookie receiver seasons ever. In the Patriots.
Can you read
group.
Some of the names? And I mean, like, Clayton on Tampa's in there, right? One of the 8 Mike Williamses is there. Like, these guys who had no careers.
Yeah, so for every Randy Moss, there's, as you said, there's 5 guys who do nothing after, you know, 1 or 2 seasons in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are, I'd much rather have them than Davante Adams and, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling or whoever else the Packers are throwing the ball to. Jimmy Graham is a corpse at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have Russell than Rodgers. So I think this game is going to be really close. I'm going to take the points. I'm going to try and middle it. So I'm going to pick the Packers to win like 19-18.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not be surprised either way, which is honestly what I said last week about Seattle and Philly before Wentz got hurt.
Yeah.
What's your pick in this game?
I'm going to take Who'd you pick?
I picked the Packers to win 19-18. Seattle to cover. Going with another under.
I'm really torn about this game.
Yeah, me too. You know what is interesting? As a Vikings fan, assuming the Vikings have won, because otherwise I won't care, do you know who I'm rooting for in this game? I'm rooting for the Packers. I'm more afraid of Seattle in Seattle than I am of Green Bay in Green Bay.
No, but they, I mean, I don't know. You guys played so poorly last time. I'm gonna take
true.
The Packers here.
But we played pretty well for 3 quarters the first time. You know, other than you're gonna take the Packers.
What Super Bowl would, you know? I mean, forgetting about the fact that you're a Vikings fan, what Super Bowl would be the most exciting at this point? Would it be?
I mean, the answer is the Vikings. Like that's an impossible thing to.
Yeah.
But
I'm just thinking for me, like I get Baltimore, San Francisco. I mean, it really sucks. The NFC had
you hated the first one of that.
Well, it would be funny. It would be it would be the revenge bowl.
The NFC had what? Finish that sentence.
The NFC had...
What did the NFC
have? They had the Saints.
Yeah, and what happened to the Saints? They lost to a better team, so sorry.
Like, no offense. I'll be excited if the Vikings, but the average person in the country... The one thing... It's funny because you have one public team left, right? The Packers, and the Niners are sort of a pseudo-public team, which they're close to it. I mean, there's so many Niners fans out there.
I think Seattle's more of a public team.
I don't know. That's not correct. That's not correct. There are very few Seahawks fans outside Seattle. There are many Niners fans.
You meet Vikings fans in every city in the country. I have never seen somebody wearing a San Francisco jersey.
Incorrect.
In my life.
The Niners have a lot of fans.
Ever. Since 1994?
Yeah. There are a lot of football fans who are 50 plus who root for 40.
I mean, I walk around the streets in New York City.
Yeah.
I walk around the streets in New York City. I can tell you, I definitely see more Minnesota things, more Ravens things, more.
Well, they don't have an exciting star right now. Sure. But the Niners have a lot of fans.
But they had Kaepernick had the number one selling jersey in the country.
But you have a superstar in Kansas City. You have a superstar in Houston. You have a superstar in Baltimore. Yeah. So unless you get Ryan Tannehill, you're going to have you're probably not, and you're probably not going to get Deshaun Watson either. You're going to have an absolute stud.
Well, Deshaun Watson is a stud also, though.
But he's not going to be there. He's not going to be in the Super Bowl. His team's not great.
Oh.
I'm just saying, like, Lamar or Mahomes, like, you already have.
I mean, look, the NFL does not want Tennessee. That's obvious.
Yeah. I mean, who do they want? They want Green Bay number one because they're the biggest team left by far.
Yeah, well, first of all, the NFL doesn't really care about the
Super
Bowl.
At the end
of the conference, the conference championships maybe a little bit, but the Super Bowl.
No, they definitely care. They care.
Yeah.
It's mostly bulletproof, but they care. I think Green Bay, San Francisco next week. Green Bay, Minnesota would be fine if Green Bay wins that game. They don't want the Vikings. I mean, it would be cool. Listen, the Vikings haven't been there in so long.
If
you were a ticket seller, the Vikings would be very exciting because they haven't been there.
Fans
but the Packers have more fans, and the Packers haven't been there that recently. They'd also go up in huge numbers. I don't know. Yeah, Kansas City hasn't been there in forever, so that's probably very up on the list, too. Yeah. Kansas City, Minnesota, that would be exciting. That's an exciting Super Bowl.
Yeah, a rematch of Super Bowl IV.
Yeah, who doesn't remember Super Bowl IV?
Yeah. I'd also be interested in who as a Vikings fan would I be most excited? I mean, I want to play Tennessee because, I want to play the least good team, followed by Houston, obviously. Kansas City would be a good game. I think Baltimore, I've always hated the fact that, the Vikings were the only purple team in the NFL. This nouveau riche team.
I was thinking during the Vikings Saints game, the Vikings color jerseys are so great. And the white on purple.
Oh, I hated the pajamas, though. The purple on purple on purple.
Yeah.
With the pants. And that was.
But it looks very good for TV, the white on purple. I was thinking, like.
The white on purple does.
I would love a Chester chart that's the best color combos. Like, you'd have to. It's like, however many permutations.
Well, here's my biggest issue, and this is really a problem with all these NFL teams, mm-hmm. is why did they go away from the contrasting socks? Like, almost every team has the same color socks and pants now, which makes no sense because it just looks like pajamas. Why not have. If you're wearing white pants, purple socks, or green socks for the Packers, or,
Well, the Jets like green on green on green, which they pick like a greenier color with their new uniforms this year is insane, too.
I don't understand it. You need the contrast. If you have white pants, you go for the color socks. Vice versa. If you want for color pants, Washington wears the burgundy pants, so then they can have white socks. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, they go with burgundy socks. They should go with the yellow socks, for Washington.
Who's burgundy the late gold. Game next week, the Conference Championship game? Do you know?
Has that already been decided?
Yeah, of course, always. The answer is the NFC. I just checked. It switches off every year.
Yeah, well. Oh, it does?
Yeah, it's a rotation. Because CBS and Fox, you want the second game. Because it's a primetime game.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, but I mean, how about what?
Listen, we could have Vikings-Packers. Man, if you get Vikings-Packers in the snow next week, that's football.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. The Vikings and Packers had never played in the playoffs, I think, until 2004, the Randy Moss game. There was snow there. And then they played in the playoffs the year that the crazy Adrian Peterson year where Joe Webb started a playoff game. Is Joe Webb in the conversation for worst quarterback to – well, actually, who was the guy who started for the Raiders? Connor something?
Connor Cook.
Connor Cook
yeah.
or something like that? Yeah.
No, but we've had worse. Didn't Lindley play a game we've had worse.
Yeah, for the Cardinals. Yeah. Yeah, it's these situations basically where a quarterback gets injured right at the end of the year, right? Like Christian Ponder got injured in week 17 the game when they beat the Packers. And so, it would be nice to have an NFC championship in Green Bay. That would be pretty sweet. I really, of the three teams remaining in the NFC, I'm least afraid of Green Bay. I really am. So bring them on, I say.
I think all these teams are pretty similar. With the caveat being that the one is playing the four, in my opinion, this week.
San Francisco has the highest ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but sure. And I did say this, and I'm not saying I predicted the Niners do anything. But the one thing I noted when I did the deep dive in the preseason about their team is like they have like 15 guys. And so that they're much more they're much less susceptible to injury other than Garoppolo than any other team, which ended up being true.
You were high on their receivers in the preseason, and I thought that was
the receivers
nuts.
and the running backs, and not because they're great. And I didn't think Samuel would be this good, obviously, and they didn't even have Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah. And they
but
didn't have Sanders.
It is true. And it ended up being the line is so good if you look at it. Le'Veon Bell got like just over 1 yard per carry before contact this year. The top two guys in the league by a mile are Mostert and Breida, meaning they're not even doing anything. Like the line is their run, which is interesting because it's in. I mean, if they could run on Minnesota, they're gonna win by 30. But I don't think they could run on Minnesota.
Well, the tough thing is, so the Saints had only given up. Drew Brees had not been sacked in four of the previous five games, and the Vikings got to him all game. The Saints had an NFL record, 8 turnovers the entire season. They never turned the ball over. Mm-hmm. And in this game, the Vikings turned him over multiple times. Brees threw a pick. Brees had a strip sack. So, you know, those are if you can think of that as one of two ways. Either you can think of that as sort of the Vikings got lucky and that's not going to repeat itself. Or you can think, well, if they manage to do it against New Orleans, well, San Francisco takes care of the ball less well. San Francisco's offensive line is good, but is it better than... Now, again, the Vikings found the hole in the interior of the line for New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I don't know if San Francisco's interior of their line, I think, is better, and I think Staley is healthy. Everybody's healthy for San Francisco. They really earned that bye. You had said this earlier in the year. I think it's true. If the Vikings were to win this game, that's the most impressive... That's the toughest first and second round opponents ever.
Yeah.
2-13-3 teams, you know, probably the second and third best teams in the league after Baltimore. That would be a very, very impressive row to hoe. So San Francisco was definitely the favorite, but... I'm not getting my hopes up. I'm approaching this game the same way I approached last week's game, which is I think they're probably going to lose, but I think they have a chance to win. So that's all you want at this time in January, a chance.
All right, we'll see. And can you commit now to doing a well, it's a little tricky because that's a Saturday night game. So I don't know if we do a rapid reaction. Well, it's Saturday afternoon game. I don't know if we do a rapid reaction after the Vikings game, but I guess, yeah, why not?
Because you'll be sleeping.
No, I'll be awake. So let's do it. Let's do it.
Well, but it's only worth it if it's a close game, right? If it's like...
No, or if you win. If you get blown out... It's not super interesting. But if you guys win it's a close game.
If they
game.
Get blown out, it's not interesting, right? Like after the Minneapolis Miracle, I had a whole bunch of people. I was, as listeners will remember, I went to Florida. I was in my in-laws' house for the NFC Championship game. And a bunch of my friends in South Florida wanted to come watch the game with me to sort of witness my live reactions because of what had happened the previous week. And the Vikings got blown out by the Eagles. And, you know, it was totally uninteresting by, you know, the third quarter. So there's definitely that chance. And if that's the case, then we can podcast in the third quarter for all I care.
Okay. So we'll try and get something out. Yeah. And it'll be the main feed. The only reason we really put that on the Patreon feed is because you're just so offensive. We couldn't put it on the main feed.
Well, I mean, if it's a close game, I'm going to be an emotional wreck again.
Yeah, but try not to drink. It makes no sense to drink during. You have to be alert.
My heart rate was so like my dad actually is the one who told me to go get the bottle because he was worried about it. He thought I needed something to.
My dad told me to drink. Okay.
Yeah, it was.
What trailer park were you guys watching this game in?
By the way, my dad asked me. You know, my dad just bought a nice big flat screen TV. Mm-hmm. He specifically bought it before the season to watch Vikings games. He has not watched a single Vikings game on that television.
He comes over to your house.
Yeah, and so he says to me, "Can we watch the game at my house?" He said to me. And I said, sure. And I said to Jen, I'm going to go to my dad's house. And Jen said, okay, well, then you're taking all three kids. So that's why we ended up back in mm-hmm. my house. Now, this game, you know, just for the Sabbath observant, Shabbat ends in New York at about 5:30. The Vikings game starts at 4:30 Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
So this happened with the Gophers-Wisconsin game a month ago. And I did. And I
honestly, you should just turn it on. I don't think you should bother with the first quarter because they'll be early second quarter.
Oh, you're saying watch live? No, that's
live.
Terrible. Oh, I thought you were saying just turn it on when it starts.
No.
You see someone proposed in some group chat for Renap? Akiva keep Rob keeps Shabbos 1 week. Akiva does not keep Shabbos
okay,
1 week.
Okay, fine.
How will Mara respond to that proposal?
I don't know. She doesn't want to hear anything about this podcast.
Yeah. So I told my dad the same thing that I told him for the Vikings game, and I told some friends also said, "Hey, can we come over and watch with you?" And I said, "Anyone's welcome to come. Here's the deal: as soon as Shabbat's over, I'm starting the game from the beginning, fast sorting through commercials. We'll catch up around halftime. You cannot have your phone in the room. I do not want a reaction, an accidental reaction. My dad ruined the Gophers game.
I would go much further. What's no that? Phone in the house." I'm being serious because if they're coming, they're gonna go check what the score is. Like, no phone in that, or like give you their phone. Like, you cannot, you're leaving if you check your phone, because there's, you're still going to get a
celebrity wedding.
Like, ooh, what's, yeah, exactly. Like a celebrity wedding, like going to, you know, a major, you know, Aziz's concert, and they make you put the phone in the, in the, in the pouch. Not that I've been to Aziz's concert.
Or like a confidential Senate hearing that Republicans break into anyways and violate, but. I mean, my dad claims he wouldn't ruin it for the Vikings-Gophers game, for the Gophers-Badgers game, but then at one point he looked at his phone and he let out an audible, shit, just like
so
that.
So your dad is the Chemi?
I knew it. He ruined it.
Your dad is the
Chemi? Yeah, my dad ruined it for me. And my dad's a bigger Gophers fan than I am, so, you know, it was just annoying, like, I don't know why he had to do that. He didn't even do that, by the way, when we first started, at which point it would have been the second quarter. He did that when we were at about halftime, which means the game was already, like, deep into the third quarter, so it was even worse. Mm-hmm. Because the Gophers were down at that point. The question is, would they come back? So, yeah. So, if you want to come, and some of our listeners are people who are might want to come, if you want, you know, who our friends live in the neighborhood, you're welcome to come over Saturday night as soon as Shabbat's over. Be there at 5:30, but you cannot have your...
But they're all going to know... Some of them are going to know the score going in. I see, I wouldn't invite anybody. I would never watch... You would have to... You need to have to pay... Like, to watch a big Jet game with me, you would need to pass a test. Like,
the test
Jets
is
history,
you know what happened.
Jets history test. Like... You would need to bleed green and white. I would not let you in the room otherwise.
I'm also a little worried because I feel almost like I'm an animal in a zoo. They want to come witness me because like they know I'm going to be like, you know.
I was so sweaty during the Jets, Colts. You know, I was in Disney World both years for the Jets AFC Championship game run with Sanchez. And the first year, my grandfather and I left the park to some hotel on. We took like the monorail to like the closest hotel so we wouldn't be out of the park for more than like 4 hours. And I was watching, and I couldn't physically sit down after the first few plays of the game. We're in like sort of a bar, and I was just standing, pacing around the entire bar the whole game. And the end of the game, the bartender came over to me. He's like, "How much money did you have on this game?" And I was like, $0. Like, and he was like, well, he didn't even understand because I couldn't breathe, you know? We obviously had to watch the second year.
I pace, and then I do like I collapse onto the couch every once in a while, but I can't just sit and relax.
Game 7, Mets Cardinals. I stood up in the bottom of the first, and I was never physically able to sit back down again. Like I could not sit down from the bottom of the first until Beltran didn't swing.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, we'll be back next week with we'll talk about the Final Four in the NFL and are the Vikings there?
Well, I thought you said we're gonna be back Saturday night.
Oh yeah, that's true. Well, we'll see. Who knows?
To be determined. Hey, that's up to you, Kirk Cousins.
Okay.
Do you like that?
We'll see.
I like that.
Bye.
Bye.
Gentle people there, gentle people will be a loving there. All across the nation, such a strange vibration, people in motion. There's a whole generation with a new explanation. People in motion for those who come to San Francisco. Summertime. San Francisco. If you come to San Francisco, summertime will be a love in there.
That was good.
Thank you, sir.
What else you got?